14th of September 2024, and I would like to warmly welcome Venerable Homagama Dhamma Kusala Thero for this session, and I'd like to welcome everyone who is participating via Facebook live stream or with us via Zoom, or anyone who will be listening to us later on. Our program, as usual, will be commencing with an in-session practice of mindfulness guided by Bhante. And we will then move on to the talk by Bhante on today's topic. And finally, we will have the reports sent to us by our listeners. And we will then present them to Bhante for his feedback. And also end with, if we have some time, we will end it with some questions. So to begin today's session, I invite Venerable Bhante to start the in-session mindfulness practice. Over to you, Bhante.
Thanks, Sonali. Hello, everyone. Today we can do a sit-in session to start our program. For this, you have to make sure that you are seated comfortably. If you feel like it, you can turn on video and join more actively. Sit in a comfortable manner. Then gently close your eyes. Bring your attention to the present moment and notice what you feel in your sitting posture. You may feel the pressure on your back. Some of you might notice the natural breathing in your body. Whatever the prominent bodily sensation, you can bring your attention to that sensation. We try to maintain our mindfulness with this sensation. If it is the breathing, you can notice the breath goes in and it comes out. Again, the breath goes in and it comes out. This way, you try to be mindful of your natural breathing. Time to time, your mind might get carried away. Various thoughts, memories, future planning, surrounding sounds and storytelling based on them. Sometimes sleepiness, certain irritations in your body. You get carried away with these things. But after a while, you realize that you have gotten carried away. With that realization, you can again return your attention back to the breathing. Try to continue with the breathing attention and stay there. Again and again, you get carried away with various thoughts, memories, but you can realize and gently return your attention back to the breathing. This way, let's try to continue our mindful sitting for a few more minutes. Okay, everyone, now you can open your eyes again. So that's our time for mindful sitting today. This is just to give you an idea so you can practice on your own. With that, Sonali, you can take over.
Thank you, Bhante. Hope everyone had a good mindful sitting session. Next on the agenda is the talk. Today's topic is ego, and we will continue this topic from last week. I now invite Bhante to start this week's talk.
Okay, everyone. So this is a continuation from last week. Let's try to take some time and discuss this topic further and see how we can relate it to the practice. The mindfulness practice. Now, most of us, when we work with other people, when we deal with day-to-day matters, usually we need to be right all the time, right? Whatever the decisions we make, we think that they are right. Whatever the thoughts that we have, we think it's reasonable to have those thoughts, right? So this way, we usually deal with the society, deal with other people. I am right. That's the motto, usually, right? Whatever the decisions, whatever the things, I think, I decide, they are right. That's our thinking. So we have this self-centered thinking. We think that our thoughts are justified. Our thoughts are correct, accurate. Our decisions are justified. Our decisions are correct, accurate. So this way, we usually function. And what happens when you encounter two such people? Both of them, they are thinking that they are right. Right? Whatever the ideas they give, each of them, they think that they are right. So when the other person says something against, then there is this argument. Right? When they work together, whatever the things each of them are doing, they think those things are accurate, correct. And when somebody, the other person is doing something else, there's this conflict. So you can see, in our lives, when we think that we are right all the time, what happens is that it creates conflict. It creates conflict with the society. It creates conflict with the other people, maybe family members, friends. So this way, we usually work. We think that every battle, every incident, we need to win. We should be accurate. That type of a thinking pattern we usually have. But when it comes to this topic that we are about to discuss, there's this very nice quote. The quote says, sometimes it's fine to lose battles in order to win the war. That's the quote. Maybe you have already heard it. It's okay to lose battles in order to win the war, right? So for us to understand this, we have to understand the difference between battles and the war. Battles are single incidents, single incidents, single encounters that happens in a certain location, maybe during a certain time. That way the battles are there. But when it comes to war, it's a much greater thing, right? In a war, there are so many battles, right? Those battles, each and every battle won't decide who will win the war. But altogether, all the battles, when we take them together, it'll decide the fate of the war, right? So that way, this quote says, sometimes it's fine to lose battles in order to win the war. You have to pick your battles. Sometimes when the conditions are not good, it's okay to lose a battle. Right? It's much better to lose a battle than wasting your resources and people. Right? So this is the idea. Sometimes it's okay to lose a battle in order to win the war. You make sure you preserve your energy, you preserve your resources, and you utilize them properly. That's the very idea. So this quote says that it's okay to lose certain battles with the idea of winning the war, right? So in our life also, there are certain battles, it's okay to lose them. It's okay to lose them because that will help you to win the war in long term, right? So that idea we have to relate to our lives. That idea we can relate to our practice as well. Now, if you think that you have to win every battle, if you think that you have to win every argument, if you think you have to be right in every decision, then it is not helping. That big fat ego of yours, it's not helping. Usually it is ruining the incidents. It's creating conflict with other people, right? So this way it is creating a huge mess in your life. So it's important that you know what are the battles you should win and what are the battles it's okay to lose, right? You don't have to win every battle. Instead, sometimes you still think that you are right, but you keep quiet. You let the other people feel like they won, right? For you to have that attitude, of course, your ego has to be sacrificed. Otherwise, you won't allow it to happen. If you have a big fat ego, you think that every little battle you have to win. Every argument you have to win, right? Every incident you have to be right. That type of a thinking pattern you usually get. But this idea is deeper than that. This idea will help you to navigate the life much better. This idea will help you to preserve your energy and resources much better, right? So that's the idea. Whenever you allow somebody else to win, right, there's this ego death inside you. There's this ego death. So you have to accept that. Otherwise, you won't allow it to happen, right? So in a way, we can relate this to the mindful practice as well, right? When we are mindful, it's not only during the walking, sitting practices. There we start, of course, we recommend that the newcomers start with walking and sitting practice every day, at least like 30 minutes of mindful walking and sitting. They should do. But that's just the starting point. That's just the starting point, right? And when you mature in your practice, you realize as long as you are awake, you are meditating. Whatever the activity that you are doing, you are meditating. Whatever the location you might be in, still you are meditating, right? So that's the very idea of mindfulness practice. As long as you are awake, you can meditate. Giving attention to the task at hand. Maybe you are talking to somebody. Still, you can be attentive and talk to the other person like you are meditating. They say mindful communication. Usually, we are not ready to listen to the other person. We go into these social encounters. We are greedy to talk, reluctant to listen. That's what we are. We are greedy to talk. We have our own ideas, thoughts that we want to share. But we are reluctant to listen to the other person. So what happens is that most of our communications are faulty. The other person is saying something else. we understand something totally different, right? So that happens. We have this very nice game in Satipatthasala. It will show the importance of mindful communication, right? So this, there's this line of people, a message is delivered to the person at the end of the line, and they have to communicate it to the next person. Secretly, they have to pass the message to the second person. Then second person has to receive the message and pass it to the third person. So usually they act it out. They act it out, the message, they act it out, right? So when the message goes through this line, let's say 20 people, right? When the message goes through this line, you can really see how the message is getting corrupted, right? First person says something, the second person gets only a part of it. Then third person, even a weird kind of a message. Fourth person is having a totally different message. So you can see when the message goes through this line, starting from first person to the 20th, right? The entire message is totally corrupted. And you compare the very first message and the message received at the end, totally different, right? It's a funny game, but it will tell you how people are communicating. And it's funny when it comes to a game, but it's not funny when it comes to the real world, right? So you tell something and the other person receives a different message, right? So this way we usually function. That's why they say mindful communication is important. You listen first. You have two ears and one mouth. Maybe the God intended that you should listen more, talk less, right? So that way we try to communicate with others. And when we communicate mindfully, most of the things are sorted out. We know what the other person is trying to say. We know our thoughts, emotions, so that way it helps, right? Sometimes when somebody is saying something that goes against your beliefs, right, you don't always have to correct them. That is not necessary. Why are you wasting your time and energy like that? What is there for you when you correct them all the time, right? So those are incidents that you can pick your battles. You can pick your battles. Am I supposed to correct this person? Should I waste my energy correcting this person? Right? Certain things you have to let them slide. It's much easier and it'll help you preserve your energy. But for you to do this, you have to sacrifice a little bit of your ego. Why? Because you know that this person is saying this. Your idea is totally different. You know that they are faulty, but still you are not correcting them, right? So that is sacrificing a little bit of your ego. There's this ego death in such incidents. Then when it comes to, let's say, family members, spouses, right? When they deal with each other for like long periods, right? They learn this art. They learn, especially husbands, they learn how to pick your battles, right? They're not fighting each and every battle. Usually they let go. They let many battles slide because it's not important, right? Maybe you have a friend, a close friend, right? This friendship is really important for you. But this friend might be having certain aspects, certain things, certain ideas that you don't like, right? So if you start correcting these thoughts, if you start correcting these actions, then it is not helping your friendship, right? So sometimes you may have to sacrifice certain battles in order for you to win the war, for the sake of your friendship. for the sake of your marriage, for the sake of your work colleagues, right? So that way we are mindful and we know that this person is doing something that we don't like. This person is having this idea that is incorrect. But among all these things, we try to be more wise and try to pick our battles and decide. We pick our battles and fight. We don't have to win every battle. Instead, in long run, we try to win the war. What is winning the war? This friendship is preserved for many years, right? You become much better at dealing with your spouse. And even at workplace, your energy is less wasted. You can focus on the things that matters, right? So that way, if you know the art of picking your battles, then it'll help you to preserve your energy. It'll help you to strengthen your social skills, right? So that's the idea that's try to give in the court this time. Sometimes it's okay to lose battles in order to win the war, right? And when you do it, you can see that certain parts of your ego has to be sacrificed. And that ego death might help you develop in your practice as well. Usually when we start our mindfulness practice, let's say as a beginner, we have this big fat ego. That is how we start. Even the walking or the breathing, the beginners, they try to control it a lot, right? They think that they are the creator of this entire thing. They try to control the walking. They try to control the breathing. So this type of a egoic behavior is there in them. But when they do few hours of practice, they develop the art of not controlling much and just simply being mindful in the process. Let's say allow the body to walk in a natural rhythm and be mindful. Allow the natural breath to happen and be mindful. That way, after a few hours of practice, they develop the ability to let go. They develop the ability to let go of controlling the walking. They develop the ability to let go of controlling the breathing. They allow their natural body to walk. They allow the natural breathing and simply try to be mindful, right? So this way, in a way, when we practice, we can see that self-centered nature is somewhat reduced. They are not trying to control everything. They are not trying to own everything. Instead, after a few hours of practice, they develop the ability to let things happen and be the silent observer. That ability they develop. And with that, they become much better at observing the breathing. They become much better at observing the walking. They stay with the breathing sensations. They stay with the walking sensations. That way they try to develop their mindfulness. And what happens when you stay with your breathing for a while? What is happening to the breath when you do that? What is happening to the walking sensations when you stay with those sensations for a while? That you have to see in the practice. Usually, when you stay with your breath for a long time, when you observe it mindfully, you realize that the breath is starting to change. That sensation is changing. Even the same thing happens to the walking sensations as well. The walking sensations, they start to change. This change is a threat for your ego. Right now, you thought that the breath is constant. Breath is not changing. That's what you thought. So you hold on to your breath. That becomes your ego. I am the breath. That way you think. But when the breath is starting to change, then there is another phase of your practice which you have to let go a little bit more. And accept this changing breath. Right? Accept these changing sensations in your walking body. That way, it helps you to reduce your ego a little bit more. There's another ego death when that happens in your practice. Right? So that way, even after a little struggle, you accept that the breath is changing and you try to maintain your mindfulness with the changing breath. You accept that the walking sensations are changing. You develop the ability to be mindful with the changing walking sensations. Right? So that way you continue. And when that happens, certain thoughts, memories, various things come. When the breath becomes less prominent, these other things, these uncontrollable things, start to emerge. Especially in the sitting meditation, you can feel it. A whole stream of things start to emerge. Various past memories, certain dark thoughts, intrusive thoughts, a variety of things are coming. And when they come, usually the meditators, they resist it. They don't want this to happen. They don't like these things that they start to feel in the meditation. But when they receive the proper advice, what is the advice? That you just have to be with it, allow this process to continue. It's more like a healing process that's happening within you. So you have to allow these thoughts to come and go, allow these memories to emerge. Just be with the process. That is the advice, proper advice. And with that advice, you develop the ability to somehow withstand these thoughts and let them come and go. Somehow withstand these memories and let them come and go. That way you mature little by little in your practice. And when you mature, you can see there's this reduction of your ego as well. Each phase, it'll reduce your ego a little bit. Right? Initially you are resisting a lot, but with time you develop the ability to accept. With time you develop the ability to go with the flow kind of a thing. Right? So that way we develop our practice and it is helping you to sacrifice your ego a little even in day-to-day life. When it comes to certain incidents, you don't try to be right 100% of the time. You don't try to win every argument, right? The practitioners, they develop the ability to let go certain arguments. Let the other person win. Maybe let certain things slide, right? So that way, they become much better at picking their battles. Still, we are not suggesting that you lose all the battles. That's not the idea. But instead, you know when to fight. You know what battles are important. certain unimportant things, right? Certain things that will waste your energy and time, you just let them slide. Let the other person feel like they won. Let the incident just happen. Just be silent and, you know, let the other person speak. Right? So those things are important when it comes to the practice. The practitioner, they become much more efficient. They become energy efficient. That's the very idea of the practice. Most of us, we are losing energy. We are wasting energy in unnecessary arguments, unnecessary conflict. That way we are usually doing. Now, some time back, there was this person sharing their mindful experience. And that person was saying, earlier when I was driving in the highway, I go after these bad drivers. I chase them. Then I somehow overtake them. And then I slow down. This way, I try to fight in a way, have these road rages in the highway. And after having such an incident, I feel that my entire work day is ruined. My mind is agitated. I get these angry thoughts. It takes 5-6 hours for me to cool down. Right? So what a waste of energy that is. This is a stranger that you are fighting. Something so stupid you are fighting that stranger for. Right? So that way, that person was wasting so much energy in the highway, maybe wasting many hours of the day with the anger. Right? That was their previous experience. But this person started mindful practice and continued for a couple of months, maybe like 20 minutes daily. That's all they have done. Right? But that way, continued the practice for a couple of months. And after a couple of months of practice, now that attitude has changed. He's saying that I am making wise decisions now. When certain drivers, they cut me off, I just let them go. And within a minute or so, the car disappears and I'm back to my usual self. Right? So that way I make wise choices, this person is saying. So see the change after a few months of practice. See the change in that attitude. See how much energy that will preserve. That's the very idea. Even when it comes to your family matters, you know, spouses, you don't have to, you know, argue with them all the time. You don't have to fight them in every battle. Instead, sometimes it's okay to keep your silence. Let them feel like they won. What's there for you to lose when that happens? Right? So that way, we function. Even in the work affairs, when it comes to certain things, you don't have to correct such things. You can be more efficient, you know. Sometimes certain people, they function in certain ways. It is not relevant to you. So let them do that. Let them function in their own way. And when the day comes, you get the opportunity to correct them. But not when you see that person for the very first time. Not when you see that action for the very first time. That's your ego talking. The urge comes with your ego. But you let go, you be wise. And one day you get your battle. Then you can fight. But most of the things you can simply let them slide. Right? Even, let's say, your children or maybe some other people in your life, they might be doing something wrong according to your thinking. But they let them do it and, you know, learn it. It will give them a lesson, right? If you try to protect them from every harm, if you try to protect them with every incident, then you are not giving them the opportunity to learn. You are robbing them of the opportunity to learn. That happens. And maybe after 18 or so years, this child becomes an adult, but still a child inside, because the parents didn't allow him to make mistakes and learn. Why? The parents wanted the best for their children. The parents wanted no harm for their children. And the process, they are ruining their own children. Right? So sometimes when it comes to children or some other people in your life, you have to let them make mistakes and learn. Right? For you to do that, you have to sacrifice your ego a little, maybe. You have to be mindful and, you know, keep silent. And let them learn through their mistakes. Right? So there's this idea of a wise person, you know, wise parent watching over a baby. Right? So this parent, he's not trying to correct the baby all the time. But he is not ignorant of the baby as well. Maybe the parent appears to be reading a newspaper, but still he is keeping an eye on the child, making sure that the child is protected. The parent, this wise parent, allow the child to make mistakes and learn from them. But when there is this some life-threatening kind of a mistake, the parent interferes, right? So not totally ignorant. If that happens, then it is foolishness, right? If you try to control every action of the child, if you try to protect from everything, then that too is foolishness. But this parent is wise, keeping an eye, but, you know, it appears like he's reading the newspaper, right? So this type of approach is important even towards life. Even when it comes to mindfulness, we say this is the attitude that we are developing. The attitude of a wise parent. That is the ability of mindfulness. Even in your mind, you can't control everything. Right? All the thoughts, if you try to control, then it becomes a difficult practice. You allow these things to come and go. You allow the free flow of these thoughts and other objects while keeping an eye on them. That is the very attitude we are developing even in the mindful practice. Attitude of a wise parent. That's what we are doing. That is the very practice. You keep an eye on things, but you are not trying to control or interfere in every situation. And when the mind goes to certain things, maybe it's time for you to interfere. When certain things are, you know, like life-threatening kind of situations, it's time for you to interfere. But most of the time, you don't have to interfere. You just allow the mind to flow naturally and simply keep an eye on it. That's what you are doing, right? That is the very mindfulness practice when it matures. So same goes for the wise parent. Same goes for the attitude towards life. Even towards life, you can have this attitude, right? This is a very wise approach towards life. It involves sacrificing your ego, certain aspects, certain parts of your ego. You might have to sacrifice them, but it helps you to preserve your energy and become much more efficient in your daily affairs, right? So that's the idea. That's the idea. We can't point out to you that these are the battles that you should win, these are the battles that you should lose. That information we can't give you. Instead, you have to be mindful. You know your life. You know the people in your life, right? So you have to pick your own battles. You make mistakes, but you learn from them again and again. You keep on practicing, and one day you realize you have become much efficient in the process. You know which things to let go. You know which battles to fight, right? That way, in long term, you'll be much more efficient and you'll be successful. That is the idea of winning the war, right? So that's all for today. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, Bhante. That was a very insightful talk by Bhante. Next on the agenda is our Q&A session, as well as reports presented, sent to us by the listeners. We will then, I will invite Anupama to host this session and present the reports to Bhante. Over to you, Anupama.
Thank you, Sonali. And thank you, Bhante, for that talk. A lot of practical tips and advice for us all, as ego is something that gets in, ego is involved in everything we do, as you pointed out, whether we are being parents or spouses or friends or at work. So thank you for that again. Much appreciated. So I will start off by reminding everyone about our guide that we give for Mindfulness for Beginners. Tharindu is now sharing the slide with you. Most of you are familiar with this by now, but it's a little reminder for those who would like to know what to do in terms of developing your mindfulness practice. As you can see, there are some YouTube clips that give you guidance on mindful walking and mindful sitting. The links are shared in the slide in front of you. If you watch these videos, it will give you an idea on how to proceed with these practices. We would advise that you can allocate a small time on a daily basis to practice mindful walking and sitting, and continue this for a few days until you have completed at least 2 hours of each practice in total. Once you have this 2 hours of practice in each, we invite you to write a reflection report. You can present this in the form of a question or statement. You can add titles if you would like to, and describe what you experienced while you were walking and sitting, what you recognized when you were doing these activities, what was your posture like, and how did your mindfulness go. Sometimes you may experience certain prominent sensations, such as feeling of the texture of the ground when you're walking, certain pressure points on your soles, how your body weight shifted from one leg to another, etc. Similarly, in the sitting, you may experience certain prominent sensations, pressure points, and also the breath. As you are watching it, the incoming and outgoing breath through your nostrils, the movement of your abdomen with breathing, etc. Once you have completed the reports, you can send the report to us either through a Google form, the link is in front of you on the screen, or via email. You may also notice that in some of the reports, people report about their everyday mindfulness. So how they maintain mindfulness in their everyday day-to-day activities. So that's something you can do in addition and add on to the report and send over to us, which we will share at sessions like this, which is always very useful for both yourselves and the listeners. Thank you. I will now move on to the two reports that we have received for today. Report number one. There is more mindful moments when walking, sitting, and during daily life. Can see that this is due to adding the practice into life. Having written regular reports and having received valuable guidance from Bhante, past couple of weeks have felt like the mind is more and more disorganized. Tried writing a report last week, and as it didn't make sense and was a jumble, it was not sent. It is similar this week also. There is no regret or discomfort, nor this is a difficulty about the practice. Just curious. Perhaps it is a phase that comes and goes. Not sure. Hence awaiting Bhante's valuable guidance. Work tasks, household chores, and interactions with friends and family continuing as before. Only difference is that the mind is reacting less. So the colorfulness of happy or sad feelings are experienced as these arise. But then it feels like my mind is in colorless space after the happy or sad emotions pass away. End of report one.
Anubhama, can you report that there's this chaos kind of a mention, right?
Yes, Bhante.
Can you start from there and repeat?
Sure. So it says, past couple of weeks have felt like the mind is more and more disorganized.
Yeah.
Tried writing a report last week, and as it didn't make sense and was a jumble, it was not sent. It is similar this week also. There is no regret or discomfort, nor this is a difficulty about the practice. Just curious. Perhaps it is a phase that comes and goes. Not sure. Hence, awaiting Bhante's valuable guidance.
Okay, thanks. Now, usually when we start the practice, we think that it is getting rid of this disorganized nature, or it's getting rid of chaos, right? So that is how we start usually, let's say, walking, sitting practice. The mind calms down a lot. So people think that this will increase all the time. But when it comes to through meditation, sometimes you can feel that mind is utterly disorganized. You are in utter chaos. But still, there's no discomfort, you know. It's just showing the various status of your mind. And when it comes to these phases with chaos, it helps with your wisdom a lot. The practice grows in different direction. Usually when the practice grows in like concentration aspect, we feel it. We feel the calmness in mind. We become addicted to it, right? So that concentration aspect, we appreciate. But the wisdom aspect, when it grows, the mind gets disorganized, chaos comes, and wisdom is supported whenever things go wrong, right? Let's say your mind get dragged away with thoughts, memories, right, in the practice. That's something that goes wrong. But there only the wisdom is developed. Now you have to again direct your mind back to the breathing among all these thoughts, memories, things, right? Some people say it's difficult to take it back from the thoughts when it goes away, right? So that's the very task. I know it's difficult to take it back. So many thoughts are there, they are powerful. So it's difficult to return to the breathing. But that very process, they are trying among the thoughts and somehow return to the breathing, right? So that something goes wrong, it feels like. But in that process, you develop the wisdom. And when troubles come in your life, the practitioners, they are shaken, right? But that trouble, that process, that will help them to grow in wisdom. So when it comes to these sitting sessions or phases of life where we feel this utter chaos in mind, disorganized nature in mind, you have to be happy about it. It's a good omen. Now the meditation is really growing in the wisdom aspect, right? That is the permanent thing, right? Concentration, it is only temporary. Concentration helps, but it is only temporary. But the wisdom drive is permanent, right? So when that happens, sometimes it's difficult to bear. But in the process, you will grow in wisdom, right? So when it comes to chaos, when it comes to disorganized nature, consider it as a good domain. The practice is growing. It is maturing. I'm always recalling this quote from that TV show. The disciple, he comes to the master and says, "Master, I am puzzled." And the Zen master says, that's the beginning of wisdom, right? You feel puzzled, you feel disorganized, you feel the chaos. And that's the beginning of the wisdom, right? Then you have to become, consider it as a good domain, keep on practicing. And in the latter part of your report, you are trying to express this idea of wisdom. That's why you say that you feel that your mind is, although the mind is disorganized, there's no uncomfortable nature. Although the mind is disorganized, you can function as usual. You do your daily matters. And towards the end, you say that your mind is less reactive, more like a colorless kind of a nature. Right? So those are very good signs of maturing meditation. The mind is less reactive and the world becomes, you know, colorless. The world fades in a way. If the world is vivid and colorful, your mind is so attached to this world. That's why it appears like this. Right? Whenever our mind is attached towards the world, we remember them very well. We feel them so deeply. We feel the vivid and colorful nature. But when the mind is distant from the world, it appears dull. It appears colorless. It appears monotonous, right? So these are good signs when it comes to the real meditation. I'm saying real meditation. When it comes to the real meditation, this colorless nature, this disorganized nature, this less reactive nature, these are good signs. Signs of detachment from the world, right? So this is a very important phase that you are passing. What we recommend is that simply do your daily practice, continue through this process, have faith, know that this is meditation maturing, this is, you are on the correct path, have that faith, and soon you realize how much of a change happening in your life. Your attitude towards life will change. Your way of experiencing life will change. Your way of reacting, dealing with life will change. A whole lot of changes to come soon, right? So continue, and we are happy that you are making progress.
Thank you, Bhante. I will now move on to report number 2. Sitting meditation. Primary meditation object, watching the mind. Watched mind going from nose in cheek, being bitten inside mouth, to breath, and then to rise and fall of chest. A wave of sleepiness arose, but determined to sit the whole session. Pain in hip, position adjusted, then mind went to thoughts. And then images. Noted inner chatter about the images. A cold sensation passing through the body and mind, snorting breath again. Another wave of sleepiness arose. Eyes opened briefly, and mind again noted a pain in back this time. Mind going back to thoughts which passed. Discomfort in chest, abdomen noted to pass. Sat for 1 hour. Daily mindfulness. Noting the reduced attachment to objects, people, travel, food, etc. in general. Doubt arising if this was to do with becoming lazy or clinging to less things. Discussion with Dhamma friends suggested bringing in mindfulness to these situations. Tendency to impatience and irritation observed. The increased volume and tendency to speak faster noted at these times, and disappointment in lack of control noted. The next thought was that really it is not within my control, but is arising because of causes and conditions. Some cold sensations passing through body on and off, also observed, as well as sensations on feet when walking during daily chores around the house. At times, restlessness of the mind and distracted mind prominent. With much gratitude to Bhante and organizers, end of report 2.
Okay, now in the sitting part, you notice that waves of sleepiness, it appears. And when you go through it, after a while it disappears, and again the meditation continues. So in meditation, most of these things, they come as waves, right? You have to survive the first wave in order for you to see the second one. Most people, they don't even survive the first wave. They think, okay, sleepiness, I can't meditate, and they get up, they quit. That's how they react. But the proper advice is somehow just sit through the sleepiness and you realize it disappears after a while. Again, another wave comes. Right? But when you face the first one, the second wave is not so much difficult. And when you face the second one, maybe even a third one might appear. Some sessions, right? Many waves might come. Maybe like 15, 20 waves might come in a single hour. Right? So this is how the meditation works. If you get defeated at the very first wave, then you won't see the second one. Right? More waves you see, much comfortable you become facing them. That's the very idea. Not only sleepiness, even the other things like, you know, thoughts. The mind getting thoughts and mind settling down. They too appear in wave form. Sometimes the thoughts come. If you face them, then they die down. Right? Again, a second wave come after a while. So this way, the meditation, usually it goes in this wave kind of experience. But you have to survive the first one in order to see the second. Let's say pain in meditation, that too appears in this wave kind of format. If you survive the first one, you'll see the second wave starting. If you survive the second one, you'll see much rapidly with high frequency, a third wave comes, a fourth one, fifth one. Right, so that way even the pain goes through this like wave kind of formation, right? So this is the meditation, and many waves you face, much confident you become in the practice. You realize these things are impermanent. They come, they start, stay for a while, they disappear. Again, after a break, another wave comes, right? So many waves you face, more and more confident you become in the practice. Then when it comes to that day-to-day experiences, sometimes as a meditator, you have to be compassionate towards oneself. That is necessary. That is important. Even other people, they point fingers at the meditators. They are not meditating. They are not behaving. But they take the opportunity to point fingers at the meditators, saying, you are a meditator, you shouldn't be doing this. Saying, you are a mindful practitioner, you have no mindfulness. Right? So that way, they take that opportunity. But you ask them whether you are meditating? No. Right? Are you mindful? No. But they take the opportunity to point fingers at the practitioners. Right? That there's this idea in the society that practitioners should be perfect. They are above the humanness. They become like, you know, some special extraterrestrial creature kind of a thing. That's not true. Instead, when you practice, you become more and more human. When you become more and more human, mistakes too are a part of that humanness. Right? So you have to be compassionate towards oneself. And no, it doesn't matter what other people think about meditation, whether they point fingers or not, it doesn't matter. Right? You try to practice on your own, try to keep it secret. Don't, you know, go advertising your own practice. Just continue. When you continue, you realize that you have to be more compassionate towards oneself. Sometimes you lose control by talking. You non-stop talking, right? Lack of control is experienced. So those things are human nature. Human nature, you don't have to be perfect because you are meditating. That's not true. Instead, you accept your humanness more and more. You make mistakes, but you don't, you know, there's no such frustration about the mistake. You know it's a mistake, you move on, right? That is the change that will happen in a meditator, a real meditator. Otherwise, people try to, you know, control everything, every aspect of their life for the sake of meditation, in the name of meditation. That's not true. That's not the proper approach. Instead, we are not trying to become some kind of a robot or some other creature. Instead, we become more and more human. These are parts of our human nature. We make mistakes. Sometimes we feel sad. Sometimes we cry. Sometimes we lose control. All these things are part of that humanness. Then what's the change that will happen with the meditation? You will feel less frustration towards them. You will feel much more peaceful in your mind. You make mistakes, but you don't, you know, blame yourself so much. You realize it's a mistake, you move on. The resilience of your mind is increased. The resilience, that quality, that is the quality that is increased with meditation. You fall down, but you get up. Right? They say weebles wobble, but they don't fall down. The weeble toys, they wobble, but they don't fall down. No matter what you do, they stand upright. Right? That's the analogy for resilience in one's mind. You make mistakes, but you recover faster. Sadness appears, but you recover faster. Happiness comes, but it settles down faster. Right? So this way, the mind recovers much faster. That is the quality of resilience in your mind, right? So when the meditators do their practice, what change is that their resilience is increased. They make mistakes, but they recover from them much faster. They lose control, but they don't blame themselves, right? So that type of a nature is increased. You are in the process, so you have to be more compassionate towards oneself. It's okay to lose control, feeling of lack of control. It's okay. Just function. And when you function, you realize you become much more peaceful in the same process, right? That's the change. Resilience of your mind is improved.
Thank you, Bhante. Again, some very, very practical tips and advice there. Thank you to those who submitted the reports, and to Bhante, always useful for all of us, and many take-home messages there. We now move on to our Q&A session. If anyone has any questions to ask or any statements to make, please raise your Zoom hand, and then we will invite you to unmute and speak. I don't see any Zoom hands raised, so I'm assuming there are no questions or to ask today. Is that right? I just wanted to make a comment, Bhante. I think that the topic of ego, there is a lot in it. I mean, that when you were speaking about it and giving advice, I just could see day-to-day incidents or events unravel, that, you know, where, even stuff happening at work, stuff happening at home. And I think especially when it comes to guiding, I don't know, with age maybe an experience for us, we do perhaps let go a little bit more, I feel, when I was young than when I was younger. So the notion that not everything is within our control, we seem to, I don't know, I seem to have got more of a hang of it with age. When it comes to guiding children, in your experience, do you feel they are better at it, or with conditioning, do they, there is this notion that you can be anything you want, and it's a way of empowering children nowadays, isn't it, to kind of give them this idea that you can be anything that you want. But somehow that can sometimes become a negative thing, because they won't sometimes have enough resilience to accept you know, things beyond their control. I don't know whether you have any comments on that one.
No, what you say about, you know, with age we grow in wisdom. There's somewhat.
Well, I hope so.
Yeah, that's the wisdom in, you know, grandparents. Usually they appear wise, right? Because they have experienced life. And sometimes, you know, they just know that this is how things are. So they just keep quiet, right? So that ability with age come, of course. That's true. But sometimes even with age, certain people are like immature, right? So you can't always say age, but age helps, of course, right? But this type of a practice might really help one to grow in wisdom. That is the very idea. So they in the practice, when they go through these phases of the practice, they have to let go in certain ways in those phases, right? So they in the process, they grow in wisdom, and that will be applicable for their daily life as well, right? So that's why we recommend this type of a practice at a young age, if they can do it, even whenever you get a chance. If you can do this type of practice, that will help to change your approach towards life, right? With age it comes, but it is, in a way, it's slow, sometimes too late, right? So this type of approach is much better. And as you said, with age, you know, even let's say a marriage, initially there's a lot of conflict, but with time, maybe like 20 years into a marriage, they know how to handle it, right? So those experiences count, but that's not enough. That's what we are trying to say, right? Let's get into the practice and see how the practice can help us mature much faster, much better in dealing with life and dealing with people, everything, right? Then the children, nowadays, this modern day motivation things, sometimes, as you mentioned, it is harmful sometimes. So we can't really say that is accurate, but children, usually they are curious. They want to experiment, they want to try different things. So in the process, they are learning a lot. So the wise approach towards them, I think, is that we have to let them make mistakes and learn. That is the proper approach. You give them opportunities, you let them learn. In the process, they will learn the failure as well, no? They will learn the failure. When they make mistakes, they know that they failed. And then you can support them to accept that failure. That type of approach is important. So that wise kind of approach towards life is important. Wise kind of approach towards children is important. That mindful attitude. That's what I was trying to say. It's the attitude of a wise parent. Mindfulness, it's the attitude of a wise parent. The parent is keeping an eye on the children, but it appears like he's reading the newspaper, right? Whenever there's this life-threatening situation, he interferes. But most of the time, the parent is allowing the children to make mistakes and learn. Same goes for the mindful attitude in our mind. We allow things to happen. We are not trying to control it much. When you mature in your practice, you just keep an eye. Keep an eye on them. Things come, thoughts come, various memories come, various ideas come. But simply, you know, keeping an eye on them, allow things to happen. Once in a blue moon, you might have to interfere. Even in your mind, in your practice, you might have to interfere and, you know, prevent certain things. So that type of attitude we are developing, an attitude of a wise parent in our mind when we practice mindfulness. So same goes for the children as well. When you have that attitude, you can allow children to make mistakes and grow. That's the very idea. You know, they learn a lot in the process, right? Most of the time, what we have to do is, you know, let them be. Let them be. That's the proper thing. The greatest gift I received as a child, I can say that I got my childhood. You know, nobody was there to manhandle me. Nobody was there to, you know, lecture me. So I was free and running here and there, climbing trees, jumping, breaking, have arms, breaking ankles, right? Teeth broken. So whatever the things I got to do, it was a whole lot of learning experience. But nowadays, the parents, they try to interfere with everything. They try to protect them from everything. And in the process, they are ruining. Right? We can learn and learn a lot from the nature. When the time comes, the animals, they allow their children to be. Even the monkeys here, the yellow monkeys, the little ones, not even 1 week, 2 week old. But they are just wandering in the forest. The mother is busy feeding herself, allowing the ones to learn on their own, right? But whenever some emergency happens, the mother is there for them. Sometimes some predator comes and, you know, grab them. That too happens. So nature is like that. But nature teaches some valuable lessons for us. Now, that monkeys even tell us something. So that way we can find the proper balance. It's always a balancing act. You can't be totally ignorant towards them. you can't interfere with everything in their life, right? So between those two extremes, you have to balance. Now there's this 30-something-old boy who is here trying to, you know, stay for a long retreat. And when I ask his details, he has no life experience. 33 years old. Right? Did you work? No, he said. Parents said you shouldn't be going to work. There are bad people in the society. You might get addicted to drunkenness. No work. I asked him, did you go outside the house and do some things? He said, I go to the grocery shop. That's what I do. So that way, the entire lifetime is wasted. And now this guy, fellow, is here trying to become a monk. That's the worst job in the entire world for such a fellow, right? That's how people function. They think that they can protect these young ones from everything. And in the process, the parents, they have to give up one day, no? Right? They have to give up one day, right? So, 33 years old, but this he is still a child. He's not ready to face this world. So what can you do? Now it's too late, right? So that type of wise parenting, without having children, I'm advising. I'm sorry about that, right? But still, that mindful attitude we have to develop. And when the children becomes adults, the parents' role disappears little by little. At the end, you know, the parents should be nullified. Well, that's the very idea. By age 20 or so, that they become really independent. If you can approach that gradually, having that balance, you know, not trying to interfere with everything, but, you know, making sure that they are safe in certain aspects, that balancing act is the one you have to do. Transit's always a learning process.
Thank you, Bhante. It's a great conversation. Thank you. I think, do we have any questions or comments? Or are we going to conclude the session, Sonali? Do you think it's time? I'll hand over to Sonali. Thank you.
Thank you, Anupama. I think, yeah, we are slightly out of time now. So we will have to end the session. So thank you, everyone who asked the questions, who sent in reports and participated in today's session. Thank you to anyone who participated via the Zoom link and who may be listening to us later. So on behalf of all the organizers, I'd like to thank Venerable Homa Gamadhamma Kusila Thero for his continued guidance for this program, and also the Chief Abbot of Nisaranamane, Venerable Udiri Gamadhamma Chiva Mahathero, who initiated this program, and also to all the organizers behind the scene who are trying to get everything together and keep going, and may these merits help them to improve their own practice. And thank you to everyone who participated, as I said before, and who also listening to live stream as well. So we will always have the session next week, 1 p.m. Sri Lanka time. And we will now end the session. Hope you all have a happy and mindful week.